Welcome to the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news, stories, and analysis on Canadian basketball. I'm your host, Lee Ben Osman. I've been wanting to do an episode covering the U Sports basketball landscape for a minute now. If you know me, that's where I got my start covering basketball. And I still go to games all the time. It's some of my favorite basketball to watch in the city. But recently, maybe not just recently, over the last few years, some of the top players in U Sports have been getting calls and offers to go play NCAA Division I basketball. And I wanted to speak to U Sports coaches on how they're adjusting to this. Are programs embracing it? Do some hate it? Or do some love it? Joining me to discuss these changes is a man that just hit the 500 win milestone in U Sports, was the head coach this past summer of the Ottawa Blackjacks at the CBL, has also coached with Canada basketball at various levels, and he's the head coach of the Toronto Metropolitan University, my alma mater, Dave DeVario. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
Appreciate you having me. Yeah, it's nice. Great to see you again.
I just mentioned 500 wins. Do you like look back at your journey and like what goes through your mind when you hit your 500 wins as a coach?
I think the first thing that hits me is I'm old, right? Like you got to be around a long time to win 500 wins, but just the journey and getting to that point and all the people that you've met along the way and all the coaches and assistant coaches that have, you know, contributed to this and the players. And it's been a long journey, and the friendships and the relationships along the way have made it really special for me. If you'd asked me if I was going to achieve this milestone, I wouldn't know. But I'm very thankful and very grateful and very humble that I was able to achieve it. But you don't do this alone. You do this with some great people supporting you along the way.
Yeah. When I think about 500, I think it puts you probably in a rare category of like U Sports coaches that I don't know how many have actually hit 500. But for yourself, obviously started coaching what? Ottawa, mm-hmm. McGill, now TMU. How has like maybe your philosophy as a coach adapted over the years and changed? And I feel like adaptability is probably the biggest thing for coaches, right? Being able to adjust to how the game is played nowadays. How has your like philosophy as a coach changed?
Well, you definitely have to adapt or else you're not going to be successful. I mean, players change, the game has changed. The whole introduction of analytics has changed the game. So if you're not adapting to the way things are and the way players are, you're probably not going to survive in this profession. But at the same time, you have to rely on the things that have helped you be successful along the way. And so there's probably a little bit of old school in me, some tough love, but also knowing that you got to let players be players. And I think my experience with Canada basketball and coaching like RJ and coaching Jamal Murray and those guys really taught me that you got to coach them up, but you got to let them be who they are. And so that was a really valuable lesson for me. And I've taken that to, you know, every school that I've gone to, and just, you got to embrace change. If you don't embrace change, you get left behind.
Yeah. 8-2 start to the regular season for TMU. What's been the most impressive for you just about what your roster has been doing to start the year? Final 8 bound, if I say, like,
I hope our alum would like to hear that for sure. But that's our goal, right? Trying to build on, you know, what Coach Rana did before and trying to keep his legacy going and with the things that he did here at Ryerson or TMU now. And so, you know, it's with COVID kind of changed the world a little bit and basketball a little bit, and where were we at with the program? And so we've really had to kind of go back and rebuild it. And so, you know, I think the pressure of the reputation of what Ryerson basketball is and was is – got to me a little bit because I was looking for that instant gratification and success. And then I had to do a recheck and think about how we want to build this and make it sustainable and where we want to go with this.
How did you get the team? You tell me about that, because I know you're at McGill. Mm-hmm. McGill is a high level when we talk about it. Not to talk down on the RSEC, but you guys were getting you guys were getting to the final 8 several years, right?
Yep.
So leaving that, coming to OUA, very competitive. Mm-hmm. I'm honestly glad I don't have to watch Carleton win every single year.
Yeah.
I'll get your thoughts on that. I don't know what's changed, but like to make that, like, I feel like in U Sports now, there's not one team that's constantly dominating. You know what I'm saying? But what's been, tell me about how TMU became an option for you and moving from Montreal to Toronto.
You know, McGill was a great place for me. They treated me so well. I never actually thought I would ever leave. I mean, I had some options and some different opportunities, but, you know, McGill was keeping me there. They treated me really well. I love the city of Montreal, and we were successful. And I think that was part of the challenge leaving Ottawa U was nobody thought we could ever win at McGill. Always known for its academics. And so that challenge kind of it hit me, and I wanted to do something special there. And I thought over our 10 years, we did that. But you get to a certain point where I don't know if we could have gone any further. We had gotten to the Final Four twice, and I didn't think we could go beyond that. And so what was the next challenge for me? And being a Toronto guy, I wanted to come home. My son was at Orangeville in a senior year. My parents are still in Toronto at the time. And so it's like, do I want to go home if this opportunity comes up? And I mean, I waited back and forth. I think the deadline was 5 o'clock for the application. I think I put my application at 4:59. So I weighed with it. It was a tough decision for me to leave McGill, but I wanted to come home. I wanted to do something. I know Roy had taken the team to the finals and got real close. I think they lost by 2 in a championship game.
I think I was there for that game.
Were you? Okay.
I was in Halifax.
Yeah, yep. That's right.
That was probably one of the craziest games I ever witnessed.
Yeah.
And Calgary won off forgetting his name, but
who was on that team? Yeah, I know the guy you're talking. Yeah.
Diawara, I think was his last name. Yeah. Layup.
That's right.
It haunts a lot of those players.
Right. And so I wanted to come home and try to do something that's never been done and take a Toronto team and to win a national championship with a Toronto team. You know, my time, I'm a little older guy, so my time is running out a little bit. So I wanted to do it. It was something I wanted to put on my resume as a coach. And I didn't think there was a better place to do it than to do it at Ryerson at the time in TMU. But again, COVID changed the world. When I came to Ryerson, they had a really good team. Roy had left a really good team behind. And Borco, they left a really good team behind with some seniors. So I thought, this team has a chance to go back and win it. And then with COVID, I never got a chance to coach any of those guys. And so we had to rebuild. And so I like where we're at right now. I like the direction that we're going. I think our team has a chance to be successful this year. It's wide open, right? And so I don't regret leaving Montreal or McGill. And I'm really happy where I'm at right now.
You obviously came during COVID, like you just mentioned. And during that change, a few years, I think, right around that time, NIL becomes a big thing in college basketball. And that's why I wanted to have you on this podcast, just talking about how coaches are adjusting to this new landscape where now NCAA schools are calling for youth sports players. I never thought I would see the day, but watching it live, I think you knowing the talent of that for coaching it for how many years, you know that youth sports players are capable to play at the D1 level. What was that initial reaction when you heard, wow, they're starting to call up youth sports players to come play?
For me, it's about time. If we'd have had this back in the day with all those guys that were playing youth sport back in the day, there would have been so many Division I guys. And so this is an opportunity that, you know, it's well-deserved. There's so much talent in this city or within youth sport itself that there's enough guys that could play Division I basketball. What level, that's to be determined. But never a doubt whether the talent existed. Right. And so for us now, it's like, how do you use this in terms of your recruiting? Are you going to fight this? If you fight it, you're going to get left behind. Because this is the trend. This is the way it's going. We talked about adapting over the years. And so I think this is a good thing because being a father of a basketball player, my son's goal was to play Division I basketball. And so if I can help a young guy get to Division I and do the things that he wants to do, I'm all for it. You know, you get those guys that get bitter because, I coached him for 2 years and then he's moving on and there's nothing in return. There's that perspective and there's the other perspective that you've actually helped somebody get to where they want to get to. And then you go find the next. So we actually use it in our recruiting right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, we do. We find a kid that we think is really, really good. We tell him, we'll be disappointed if you're still here in 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we need to get you to where you want to go.
What's the response usually when you tell kids that?
I think kids are for it, right? I mean, every young man wants to play Division I basketball. And now with the portal, these kids are not getting those opportunities because universities, U.S. colleges are recruiting seniors. transfers. So young kids and freshmen are getting left behind. And so they need a place to play and a place to grow. So I think U-Sport is the best avenue. You can go to JUCO, no question. But if you can go to U-Sport and play 20 minutes, 25 minutes a game, put up numbers, get credits towards a degree, I think that's probably the best route for you. Because even if you're a freshman and you go down there, you're probably going to play 3 minutes a game.
Get redshirted most often.
Yeah, right. And so, like, if you can come here and play and put up numbers and then go play down there, like, you, and you see it, there's like 8 or 9 kids who've done it over the last year or so, and they're all successful in where they've gone. If they haven't, they've moved on or they've benefited financially. That's a win-win scenario. And so that's how we approach it. It's a win-win scenario, and we're not here to hold you back. Again, if you're still here after 3 years and we think you're that good, then we haven't done our job and you haven't done your job. So it's a partnership.
You talked about it. A lot of kids getting left behind now, especially with transfer portals, 25-year-olds playing college basketball mm-hmm. now. Has this made like U-Sports more competitive in your eyes, where like now a lot more talent is staying to play?
I don't think it's quite there yet. I think the JUCO route is still there because their JUCO years don't count. So I think it makes it attractive to young guys to do that. But I don't know whether, you know, we had a kid last year, Javier, and Javier was we had him for 1 year and now he's at Troy. Got his deal and went. But Javier went to JUCO for 2 years and didn't play. We got a chance to come to TMU and play and put up numbers and show everybody what he's capable of doing. Now he's playing Division I basketball or on a Division I team. And so I think that, you know, a lot of kids are going to look at that option. It's how they approach it and how they do their research and their homework and have legit and honest conversations with their coaches. Like, every time I have recruited a kid, we have these legit conversations. Like, do I think you're good enough to play Division I at this point? Maybe yes and maybe not. But we're going to try to get you to where you want to go, and here's the plan. We're going to do this together. And so I think it's a great thing. These kids are going to get opportunities to do things, but they got to embrace the different options that are available and the different paths to get to where you want to go. Like, you see kids now getting to Division I to play Division II basketball, NIA basketball, right? And so U-Sport basketball now. So what is your best option? What is the best thing that might work for you? And then now we're getting all these kids who went down there and come back, bounce back kids. And for us, when we're recruiting bounce back kids, is that we only want you for a year to get you back to where you want to get to.
Wow, really?
Right, because that's where you want to be.
Yeah.
But this is what it's going to take for you to get to where you want to get to. And so this whole thing with young guys not getting an opportunity, well, here's your opportunity.
I like that mindset because it's a lot of two of, I think in previous years, at least when I was covering U-Sports, guys would play their, go to NCAA, now it's obviously changed, and then they're not getting minutes. They're like, I want to end off playing some meaningful basketball mm-hmm. in U-Sports. And then end up, a lot of them get pro careers right off of that, right? You can, and then play professionally. There's so many guys that have done that. But you mentioned it. Can you like sort of like walk me through when a NCAA program contacts a kid?
Right.
Sometimes it happens, you know.
Mm-hmm, for sure. We've gone through it with Aaron.
Yeah. Aaron Rooms, obviously, back this season with you guys. I want to ask you about his situation too in a bit, but what's that like when the conversation, they approach him and then after a strong season, and do you, most times I'm guessing, because you're embracing it, do kids approach you and be like, hey coach, this is what's going on? People are reaching out to me. What's that like? Yeah. And being like, you know what? Let's talk this through. Like, what do those conversations look like?
One of the things that I've learned coming back to Toronto after being away for 20 years is that there's so many people that want to be involved in basketball.
Hey, you telling me that.
Right. I've always said it, right? And I've, you know, I think I have the best job in the world, but I also know that I got everybody watching me saying that he should be doing this, he should be doing that. And my line is that, you know what? I never lost a game sitting on my couch. Right? And so how do you approach it? How do you approach the criticism? How do you approach, you know, all the negativity, all these people? Toronto's a different animal than anywhere else.
Yep.
Right? Pro basketball has done that. Everybody wants to be successful and be a part of basketball. I respect that. And so you're really competing against a lot of people. And so if you go back to Aaron, I mean, a lot of people are in Aaron's ear that I don't even know, right? And for me, what's most important is my relationship with Aaron and whether Aaron can trust me and talk to me about what he wants to do and what his goals are. So I know Aaron, we've talked about it, and Aaron says, I want to go play Division I basketball. But for Aaron, it wasn't just about money. Like, some of the money is lucrative and you got to go because it's money, right?
Yep.
But for Aaron, it wasn't just about money. Aaron, like, if you look at the kids that are playing pro overseas, because guys in U Sport don't make the league. They may go play Europe and then make the league, but they don't go directly to the league.
Yeah.
And so you find that kids that play U Sport are better prepared to play overseas than guys that have played Division I basketball. The game is different. We play FIBA. The Americans don't.
Yeah.
So I think we better prepare kids to be professionals overseas than what the NCAA make, just by rules and opportunities. And it's a business down there. It's just not a business here. We legitimately care about these kids. We want to win,
yeah,
but we legitimately care about these kids. And so with Aaron, like, Aaron, what's the best situation for you? What do you want? And so we go through that process. But now I'm dealing with all the outside noise. There's an agent now involved. And I'm like, you got an agent? Right? I didn't even know. And so let's talk about that. Like, why did you feel that you needed to get an agent? Right? And so these honest conversations that you have with your athletes, I think, are important. But there's so many people that are trying to get involved and pull them this way and pull them that way. And if an agent can do a better job than I can, I'm all for it. But let's have that conversation, right? And I feel that that's not happening. And so the coaches of these kids are being left out in the dark. And then when things are not going well, then they come back to you and say, Coach, can you help me? And I think we have to change the way that things work. And so in Aaron's situation, I mean, Aaron could have went a lot of places, but Aaron wanted to play. Aaron didn't want to be the ninth man on a team.
Yeah.
Like, when you're the top dog, you're the dog. So it's hard from going to being the dog to being a ninth man where you're putting up 15, 16 shots, now you're putting up two. And that didn't appeal to him.
And you're out of rhythm.
Right.
Most times coming in. And if you don't hit those first two shots,
we may not play the rest of the game, right? Yep. So Aaron knows what he had at TMU, and he enjoyed that. I think he enjoyed playing for us, and I think he really enjoys his teammates and playing in front of home, in front of family. So every situation is different for every kid. Javier wanted to go, and so Javier went, right? And so our job is to facilitate this and make this happen any way we can. And for every kid, it's a different path. You have to understand that path, embrace that path. But I think honest conversations, like with guys, is the most important thing. And if you're going to bring someone else from the outside in, that it's a conversation that you need to have with your coach.
I don't want to put you in trouble, but you mentioned agents.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on them being in the use? Is it needed? You think it's, is it necessary? And what's that added dynamic?
I'm going to put that back on you. I'm going to put you in my seat. So if you spent 4 years, I've spent 3 or 4 years, 5 years now with Aaron. So I think Aaron and I have a great relationship. I probably know Aaron the most, right? And so when an agent comes in who might have seen Aaron play two games, and now I'm going to help you get to where you want to get, I don't know if that guy has an honest, I guess, observation or kind of like who Aaron is and what Aaron can do. And so I'm not trying to put Aaron in a situation where he's going to fail. Like, I had a lot of coaches call me about Aaron. And if I didn't think they were good fits, I would tell Aaron, I don't think this is a good fit. And I would tell the coach, look, if you're looking for this guy, this is the guy. If you're looking for something else, he may not be the guy. Where an agent just wants to get paid, right? And so if he's negotiating Aaron's contract or Javier's contract, whoever's contract, right, they're going to get paid on that. I'm not looking to get paid. I'm just trying to get Aaron the best scenario, the best situation that he can. And I know Aaron better than a guy who's watched him for two games.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's where it's different. But I understand the role of the agent. There's always a place for the agents. I just think that communication piece between the agents and the coaches needs to be better.
Mm-hmm. How do you balance to just, obviously, you want the best for Aaron, for example, for him, Javier, want the best for them, but also, like, you got to maintain, like, stability within your own program, right? How do you juggle that balance when players might be going D1, but it's like, I also, like, I need to win games. You know, absolutely. I need to win. You know?
I'm going to get fired. Yeah, so... And that is, I think it's one of the biggest challenges. And so you have to embrace that challenge. Like again, honest conversation. Aaron, are you thinking about leaving? If you are, I need to recruit at this position. Javier, are you leaving? If you are, I need to recruit someone at this position. So having those honest conversations. And the thing about TMU is we didn't get Javier till like late August. So at TMU, you're probably going to get some guys in August that aren't available in, I would say, April, May. And so you have to respect that process, know that process and what it is. And so, again, I think there's enough players out there. If you lose a couple guys to the NCAA, you can get some good players. But I think if guys know that, hey, we're trying to help you get to where you want to go, I think it opens the door to some different kinds of players and different different mindset that not every coach shares. All right. And I think it's kind of like when you look at it, you go back to Calipari and one and done, right? Those guys who wanted to go to the league. So our guys are not going to the league. They're going to Division I. So the league for them is Division I. So you look at it from that perspective, he always had a competitive team. He always had a chance to win a national championship using that mind frame. And so we've embraced that kind of mind frame. Like you see Duke do it now with one and dones. So we're embracing that, I think, that mindset and, you know, not fighting it. Just how can we make it better? How does it work for us? So it's just a constant thought process and how we can make it better.
So are you just like thinking like, this is my roster for 1 year and yeah. I need to think I'm just innovating in that type of mindset?
That's our approach to it right now.
Interesting. I was going to say, how does it change like sort of, also they introduced the first year, I think second year, if they want, they can transfer.
Yeah, a new rule, yeah.
How has that added an extra wrinkle to things?
It's interesting. I don't think we really know it yet because we haven't gone through it as coaches. This will probably be the first year we've gone through it. So I think we'll adapt with that and change with that. But I think it's a good rule because a lot of kids, you know, go to a school and don't play their first year and they want to play, they get a chance to go play somewhere else. The negative side is that, you know, our coach is going to recruit other kids' players. And you hope that, you know, within the profession and that honesty and that professional, you know, being a professional, you don't do that, but you know what's going to happen. You're not naive knowing that's not going to happen. So you got to prepare yourself for that. So I think that you have to expand your roster a little bit more than, you know, you used to carry 14, 15. You might have to carry 18, 19 now. And so prepare yourself for that.
And is it also like, I feel like most times, like the first year, second year guy will, I want to say like coaches would be like, you know what? There's a long-term path for you. Like mm-hmm. you might not play X amount,
right.
But then now they look at it like, if I'm not playing X, I'm going to go transfer. Like, how do you deal with that? Or is it just, you know what? This is the vision I have for you. This is like, mm-hmm. do you prepare them before that, before the season even starts? Talk to them about, this is what our plan is for you. This is what it looks like. If you don't get minutes, like, I'm not telling you to transfer. That's not what I'm looking for.
Right.
Like, how do you deal with that?
You know, sometimes the best laid out plans don't always work out, right? And I think being transparent with these young guys and letting them know where they stand within your program. And sometimes you got to make some tough decisions that you don't want to make, right? And in your coaching career, you go through those scenarios and how you deal with those scenarios. And I can, you know, I've been through these scenarios before at my other two schools and even some, you know, at TMU. And I think it's that transparency piece. And these guys know that, and look, this is not a good fit. This is not working out for you. How can I help you get to where you want to go? Right? And, you know, it may be a hit to your program that you're losing a guy, but you're helping someone get to where they want to go, and then someone else could be leaving in another program coming to you. Like, it's just it's changing the way basketball is because you get a kid for 5 years. Now you might get a kid for one or two or three, and now they're moving on. So, again, it's adapting. Like, do I think we can lose some guys after this year that are first? Absolutely. How am I going to prepare myself for that? I don't know because I haven't done it yet, right? We've done it through the NIL. Now we're doing it through U Sport and transferring. So I think you learn through experimentation and through, you know, trial and error situations. But I think the transparency is the biggest piece, right? Look, you're not going to play here. Right, our plan for you hasn't worked out the way we wanted it to work out. How can we help you? Where do you want to go? You want me to call this guy, right? Or do you want to stay here and just come up with a new plan? So it's just that those honest conversations that I think are important.
Is it, maybe you're not experiencing this yet, but keeping players invested in the program so it's not a distraction for others being like, you know what? I'm not playing. I'm out. You know, like some guys have that mindset maybe like 5 games into the season off without playing time. Have you seen that? Like maybe not even with your team, just like other programs of like getting word of like, this is not working out a situation with a player. And it's like, you know what? This is really going to affect a lot of things in U Sports coming up.
I'm going to be honest. I don't worry about other teams. I worry about my team. And so we haven't, luckily, knock on wood right to this point, but I believe, you know, with new rules comes change. And so I'm preparing myself for it. The one thing about TMU is it's a really competitive program. It's you know, we like to think of ourselves as one of the best programs in the country. So the competition to play is going to be, it's going to be there every day, every night. And so you got to earn your minutes. You hear that expression all the time, right? And so, you know, sometimes, you know, you recruit a young guy thinking he's going to be this guy and he's not this guy, right? And then sometimes you recruit a guy who you don't think is going to be this guy and he becomes this guy. Like, who would have thought Aaron Rooms would be, could be the all-time leading scorer at TMU? When we recruited Aaron, that was never a thought in my mind, but he's become that. And so it's going to be a balancing act, and how you deal with it, I think, is critical to your success. But I always believe that being transparent and being honest and having these tough conversations will make everyone better in the end.
How do you separate, like, getting, talked about it, you know, you coached Aaron for how many years, getting, like, emotionally invested in a guy's future, like, being obviously, like, I think this is the best opportunity for you. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes, like, you might not know it, your bias might be creeping in, type of thing, right? But you also want the best for him. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that attachment and, like, wanting the best for them, and also being like, I also think you can drop 20 here and we can, you know, do, you mm-hmm. can go play pro. Like, how do you deal with getting, like, close to these players? Now, NCAA, they've been dealing it for years. Like, guys, like you talk about, one and done, Calipari, right. That's his system, right? How do you, like, adapt to, like, not get emotionally invested in this roster, in this team, yeah, and, you know?
That's a great question. I don't know, because I'm the kind of guy that gets emotionally invested. So that's a really good question for me. I haven't really dealt with that yet. And so I guess I need to prepare myself for that, because I know what's going to happen. Like, I actually thought we were going to lose Aaron, right? And I was ready for it, because we've had these conversations and I want what's best for you. But I also want you to know that I think playing at TMU is the best thing for you. If you're not looking at finances, like the money, that TMU is probably the best place for you to play. And so, again, it's that honesty. And, like, I have conversation with, you know, Aaron and his mom. We've had these conversations, right? And, you know, recruiting's changed, because back in the day, I'm doing house visits. I'm meeting mom and dad. Now I'm meeting handler. I'm meeting this person. I'm meeting that person. So I don't, you know, I'm not building those relationships with mom and dad. I'm building them with other people that these young men trust. And so that's part of my, I think, for me, growth and adapt. I'm talking to people that, like, why am I talking to you? I should be talking to mom and dad. But I know that this person has probably played just as big a part in this guy's growth. And so it's important to me to build those relationships. I was gone for 20 years. And for me to come back, the first thing was I had to rebuild all my relationships with people that I've been really spoken to on an everyday basis for almost 20 years. And so I think that was it. And just how the landscape changed. Workout guys, right? This person, that person. And so, but I'm still a big believer that mom and dad is the people that you need to recruit. Let them know that their kids are in good. This is the path. This is the plan I have for you and your son. And let's run with that. And if they don't believe in it, I can respect that, because it may not be the same plan as what their handler thinks, or who's ever overseeing their recruiting thinks. But I always think that mom and dad are the people that I need to connect with the most.
Yeah. Obviously, NIL, so much money. We talk about it. I've heard guys getting paid $500,000 to sit on the bench, mm-hmm. just to sit on the bench, mm-hmm. watch the team. Do you think, like, maybe get your honest thoughts on this, will U Sports ever pay players? Do you ever see this outcome? Because what can players earn? I know it's different from, like, you coached at McGill. And from what I've heard, in the East Coast, they provide housing, that kind of stuff, tuition maybe. I don't know if on the West Coast, that kind of stuff. What do you know just from, like, what you can actually give an Ontario kid?
And that's where I think the most disappointment for me has been. I was gone for such a long, you know, 10 years. I was out of Ontario for 10 years. And I think, in 10 years, I'm all about, how has the game grown? Has the game gotten better? And to me, it hasn't. It hasn't. Now, like, someone who hasn't been around as long as I have, like, everyone looking, oh, man, there's so much talent in the OUA. I'm like, go back to when Roy was coaching at Ryerson and Smart was coaching at Carleton. So I went back and looked at that championship game when Carleton played Ottawa U. I mean, not Ottawa U, but played Ryerson at the time. The 10 guys that started that game were all pros. They became pros. If you look at a U Sport roster now, there's not 10 guys in that game that are pros now. So everyone looks at it from a different perspective. Like, oh, talent in U Sport is... The talent in U Sport back in the day, there was talent. Yeah. 10 pros. So the starting five at Carleton, the starting five at Ryerson,
all guys.
Were all professional. And some of them national team, if not all of them.
I just watched
team.
Them play at the That's FIBA right. America Cup at That's Bahamas. Right. Like half right. of them were all Carleton and TMU guys.
So when people say, you know, U Sport, like, I see it to an extent, but I still think back in the day, those players were better players. But there wasn't all these people pulling at them, these JUCO, AU, like, it was different times. And you got to grow with the times. And so for me with this, you know, NIL is something that I think is great for the opportunity. Like, you have to look at it from two perspectives. The hoop perspective, I'm a hooper, and now the business perspective. Like, if I can go down and make $150,000, but I'm not going to play.
I would say, personally, no one's listening. Hey, for me, I'll just get my education. I'd go into a different career. $150,000 per year for me, I'd ride the bench. But these players
but
don't
want to.
But you
could think of it There's so many different ways you can manipulate this scenario. And so that's what I'm saying. Do you think it from a basketball perspective or do I think it from a money perspective? And so put myself in the shoes. I can go to Division I, make $150,000. I'm not going to play a minute. Perfect. That means I don't use a year of eligibility. I just made $150,000 not playing. So if I want to come back to U Sport,
oh, wow.
I can come back to U Sport, not use a year of eligibility. I just made $150,000.
Wow. I didn't even think about it like that.
Right. But again, it's what perspective are you looking at this from? So I look at some of these young guys who have gone to three or four different schools in Ireland and was like, he's at four schools. Yeah, this guy's learned the system and he's taking advantage of the system. So at this school, I'm going to make this amount of money, but I can leave here and go to another school and make more money, play there, and I can go leave again and make more money. Why wouldn't you do that from the business perspective? The basketball perspective doesn't always work because your role might change, whatever. It's just the scenarios are different. But I just made $500,000 that I probably might not make playing overseas. I'm not guaranteed any of that. So now it's a business decision or is it a basketball decision? And so I think, you know, who you're talking to, who your advisors are, who the people that you trust in your circle, and who's going to give you the best advice or give you those scenarios and play out those scenarios, I think is critical. Who do you trust? Like, who has my best interest, right? I think is really going to help these young guys because the money is going to get more. There's going to be more and more money in how you do this, right? I think Ninga, who went to Kansas, you'd be a fool not to go to Kansas and make that money.
Go hang out with Darren Peterson. What I would be doing if I was him, become best friends with Darren Peterson, and then when he makes it to the NBA...
Right.
Whenever he needs me, I'll be his trainer. I'm passing him the ball. That guy's, to me, he's the next best thing.
For sure. And he's an NBA lottery guy. He probably might be the best pick. But if you look at it from his perspective, I just made whatever amount of money. You hear different reports. I may not play. You know, he's played some minutes this year, which is probably more than he expected would happen. And I'm at Kansas. So when I graduate from Kansas basketball, every alum, everybody who loves Kansas basketball, is going to be looking out for me for the rest of my life. So is that a better scenario than me staying at the school I was at? Like, it's almost like you have to. If you don't go, I'm going to say that you're being, like, you're an idiot. I'm going to straight up. It's not a great decision for you. Go. And if you don't play, here's the best part. If you don't play, you can come home and play your fifth year because you just redshirted. But you've made up whatever amount of money that you've made. So, again, I think for every young guy, and if I was giving every young guy advice, get your circle of people that you trust, go through all the pros and cons and scenarios, and make the best decision for you. And it could be a basketball decision. It could be a money decision. But whatever you decide, it's got to be the best thing for you.
Do you feel like maybe chatting to players, do they understand, like, the trade-offs? Like, academically, you just mentioned, oh, I might not play this. When you're having conversations with guys, do they fully understand, like, what it means to be jumping to a Division I program from U Sports, leaving the opportunity to, like, when you're having conversations, do they fully grasp, like, what situation is? Because I'll be honest, when I was young, Like, sometimes in one ear, out the other.
For sure. For sure, right? I mean, and today, like, money talks, right?
Of course.
You're paying me this amount of money, right? But then you get there and you're like, I ain't hooping. I ain't playing. I love playing. So how do you deal with that? Like, yeah, I'm richer. I got money. But am I enjoying this experience? So what's more important to you? Is it the experience or is it the money? Like, you hear us, all us old guys talk about, man, I wish they had had this when I played. I would have taken the money and run.
Yeah.
Right? And then you look back at it and, like, I played with some guys that went down to the States and never played. They sat on the bench. That's what you want to do? That's what you want to do. But that's not, you know, that's why I respect Aaron, because Aaron could have got paid, but Aaron wanted the experience of growing and preparing himself for, you know, being a pro. And I think through TMU, he's got opportunities to play for Canada that I'm not sure he would have got if he went to the States, because he may not be put, but who knows, man? We watched Aaron drop 16 on Oregon, right? So Aaron might have been different that way, but for some of these young guys, you know, opportunities you get in Canada, you're not going to get in the U.S. in terms of comes to hooping. Money will never compete money, right? Like, so you go back to your original question about OUA. OUA is different than any other conference because we don't give up full tuition scholarships, which makes no sense to me.
Yeah, tell me, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's ridiculous. Like I said, I left 10 years ago, and we were giving out $3,500. So 10 years later,
still same?
We're giving out $5,000. So we, yeah, in 10 years, we've advanced by giving up $1,500.
Has there been discussions?
I think
who makes these decisions?
I think the conference itself and the ADs and different people, like, but we're not playing by the same rules. Like you said, out East, full tuition. Out West, full tuition. Quebec, full tuition. And then you talk about some residents and there's like different scholarships. There's different things available. Like it's a different animal here. And so I think a part of that is the success that Carleton had all those years, right? Like, why do you guys need more money when Carleton won all those championships? So you're kind of like, you know, if you hadn't won those, you might have a better argument. But because Carleton was so successful and the OUA, you know, is successful when they go to the national championships, like, why do you need more money? You know, and I went through this process at Ottawa U when we started, you know, we were struggling as a program and then we had success. And then I got to a point where I was like, I need more resources to be successful. We got to this level, but how are we going to get to the next level? And he's like, why? Why do you need more resources? You're successful. Like, why do you need more money? Why do you need these things? Why do you need those things? And I was like, I need these things. And so that was part of my decision is why I left Ottawa U to go to McGill, because I felt I needed more and I thought I'd earn more. And so that was why I left, right? And so that's, you know, that comes with success. If you're able to do all this with this amount of resource and you're successful, why do you need more? You're doing a great job with it. And so we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot. And so you gotta manage that, and you gotta think long term. And I think our problem is that we don't think long term. We think short term. And I think for us, you know, at some point you're watching now, Quebec sent two to the national championships last year. That never happened. All these programs are getting better because they're able to do things that we can't do in Ontario. So you ask me why, you know, Carleton, you know, it's wide open now. Why isn't Carleton still winning? It's not because, you know, Carleton isn't still this great program. They are still this great program. It's just that everybody has maybe the same resources now that Carleton has that it didn't have before.
Yeah. Do you like this parity?
I do.
Yeah. What's that like too? Because I feel like who won a few years back? I think it was Lavelle, the most
they won
upsetting.
At home. Yeah. Yeah.
The last team I would ever expect to win an esports championship. Shout out to them, though. They did their thing. But when you're seeing like an 8 seed, Cinderella story, win it all, and then Carleton obviously kind of falls off a bit. They haven't been the same. But what's that like seeing, like, you know what? And I'm guessing it probably like inspires teams where it's like, you know what? You're not down and out.
For sure. I mean, it's different the way we do it because if you get to host, you get to be in it, right? So sometimes you're not always earning your way in it. But you're hosting, so you're in it, and you saw a team like Avell take advantage of being the host.
I would just, I don't know. If I could host,
yeah,
you have a whole year to prep. Sure. You kind of know ahead of time, this is the year I want to go for it.
You can try different things and do different things and experiment and do things. And so that's definitely an advantage to it, right? But, you know, in a three-day tournament, anything can happen in 3 days and game by game. And we saw that happen with Lavelle. And so with the way basketball is now, like, again, and I look at it from a different perspective now because I'm older and I've been doing this for a long time. How has basketball in this country gotten better? That's my philosophy now. So when I'm coaching, I'm thinking, I've been doing this for like forever. Has it gotten better? That's my question. And I can't say that it has. It's been eight teams, final eight. Well, you're watching everywhere else in the world, adding more teams.
I hate that.
Right.
I love that you brought that over.
So we did it for a while. We went to 10. I thought it worked well. Gave other teams opportunity. Right? So everyone else is expanding their tournament, and we're still stuck at eight. And there's more than eight good teams in this country. And so I don't see growth. Like, why isn't, like, I had this discussion, and I have some great discussions with my administration, and they're, you know, they're really good to listening to what I have to say, or maybe they're just listening to an old guy go off, right? But, like, we have a pot of money for our tuition scholarships. So whatever that pot of money is, whatever it's, U Sport says, you're allowed to give out 8.4 scholarship money. It comes out to this amount. So why can't I take my amount of money and do with it what I want? So if I want to give you a full scholarship that's worth 15 grand out of my 37 grand, why can't I do that? I'm not breaking any rules. We all have the same pot of money. I'm just using it to my discretion. So if I want to give out a full scholarship to Aaron, I can. But that leaves me with less money to give to everybody else. But you know, so you're actually becoming a it's a salary cap. You're learning how to deal with your money, how you want to give your money out, who you want to give your money out. And you're doing that now, right? But we're not on the same playing field as everybody else. And so when they're giving out full tuition, like, we lose a kid to out east or out west, and they're like, well, I can get this and this and this.
And I need the money.
That I can't do it.
Yeah.
What do you say to it? Go.
100%.
Go, man, go. Yeah. Right? And so I think that's the most, I haven't seen the game grow. And I think that frustrates me the most now that I'm at this age. Like, I'm a competitor. I like to win or lose. I want to win a national championship. But is the game any better? Like, what has U Sport done for men's basketball? What has OUA done for men's basketball? That's my biggest question now. I don't have all the answers, of course, but I think there needs to be discussion because there's so many hoopers. And I think the landscape of basketball is changing. How are we going to get better? How are we going to make it better? Because if these kids want to stay home and use us as a springboard to get to where they want to go, how are we going to make this experience? Like, yeah, like, we want good players to play in the OUA. Again, 10 guys, starting five on both teams are professional athletes. We haven't had that.
Is there urgency, you feel like, from U Sports to, like, how do you think they feel about NIL, scooping up players, top players leaving?
I can tell you this. It was an issue with hockey. They changed the rules in hockey.
What's the rules now?
I don't know. Something, they were losing players to the States about college. So hockey coaches got upset. They changed the rule. So in the States, they were talking about JUCO, not eligibility. So we're like, well, we're going to lose guys. If a kid can go to JUCO.
Not lose eligibility? Oh, my.
I'm going to tell a kid to go to JUCO. I'm not going to lie to you. Go to JUCO and then come back and figure out, come back or go, whatever, figure it out. But you should go do JUCO. So we're like, how do we make that work for us? But there's been no conversation, right? How are we dealing with it? How are we dealing with changing time? We're stuck. We're like, we're in mud. You know that tire that spins in mud? We're that tire that spins in mud. And so it's frustrating. I want it to be better. I want experiences for kids in U Sport to be better. I want our product to be better. I want everything to grow. And I haven't seen growth, and I think that frustrates me the most.
What can we do? Just like, I don't know, maybe as media. I feel like there's not, my problem was like, when I got into the industry, I was like, you know what? It's not a lot of coverage outside of like university papers, that kind of stuff, covering U Sports. And not to say like these universities don't take the university papers serious, these independent papers, because I worked for one, but it's a different scale when there's, I feel like, legacy media is putting pressures on like, what's going on in U Sports? Why is there, like McGill, like getting rid of like half their programs recently, right? Like, what's going on there? You know, like applying pressure. What do you think is the solution? Is there like, Is there something that I could do? Is there something media could do? Is there what's the solution to like getting youth sports to, you know, I used to work for youth sports actually. I did some stories for them. But okay. Now I'm applying some pressure, but I'm just like, right. What can we do to change things?
I think because you've been part of it. I mean, I would put that question to you, right? Like, now I'm a cranky old dude, right?
I agree with you, though.
I'm a cranky old dude now.
I love this. This might be one of my favorite pods I've ever done because I know what the youth sports system is like.
Right.
I know the talent that's come from there. And I'm like, it's sad, like, the way you're talking about it, saying, like, it's not as, like, I go to games and I'm like, you know what? 2016, like, these times, like, it would sell out arena, like, right. In terms of
look,
fans,
I look back,
you know?
At what, you know, Roy and Ryerson did. And I look back and the gym was full. It was packed. I'm like, we don't have that now. People will give me a COVID. I get it. We're 6 years out of COVID now. So we can't use COVID as an excuse anymore.
Right.
And so I'm not an excuse guy. So when I hear that, I mean, I don't know if I can say it pisses me off.
Yeah.
Right. It pisses me off. So I don't know if it's a priority, whether it's important to people. Like I've always tell my staff, like, I think we care about things more than other people care about things. And now, again, I'm at this stage in my career where how can I leave this place when I retire a better place than what it is? And that was one of the things that I pride myself in. When I left Ottawa U, I left it in a good place, and James is taking it to a higher place. When I left McGill, I left it in a good place, and I believe Ryan's going to take it even higher. And so when I leave TMU, I know whoever get the job, hopefully it's Jeremy, and I know I want it to be Jeremy, is going to take it to a higher place. It's just me. Like, I need other people to think like me. And how do I, like, I'm thinking outside the box. I'm like, hey, why don't we run an in-season tournament in the OUA?
I love this, man.
So I'm like, I'm going to get eight teams. So we're going to charge each guy $500, the winner takes all. So you can walk out of here with $4,000.
But right? What would the OUA say about that?
I don't know. I've never brought it to the OUA, but I've brought it to other coaches.
And they probably love
and
it.
And they're all for it.
Yeah.
I said, you know, we can go to 12 games in U sport, 12 teams in U sport, and do it the FIBA model, where pool A, pool B, pool C, you're guaranteed two games. So you don't want your ADs thinking you're wasting money, spending all this money to go out there and play one game. So you're guaranteed two games in your pool, and then the winners of each pool play in the final four. Wow. And now you got 12 teams. But again, that's just me. That's just an old guy thinking outside the box. I don't run a university. I'm not a president of a university. I'm not an AD. So it's easy for me to sit in this seat and say, yeah, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? I don't know all the challenges that they face. So I don't think I'm always being fair in terms of that. But how do we make it better? How do we make it more rewarding for these guys? And I don't think these conversations happen. So if I know why it's not moving forward, like the great thing about McGill is that I had a million questions and they came back to me with a plan. Like, they came back to me with a business plan. I'm like, okay, now we can have a conversation.
They're serious.
Right? It's serious. So this is your plan. This is how we're going to do it. You show me the numbers. So now I understand how this works here at McGill. Now I know it. I can't say nothing. I accept it or I don't. And so I accept it. I know where the revenue comes from. I know how we generate revenue. I'm good with this. I don't know that. Like, I don't know what the plan is with the OUA. I don't know what the plan is with U Sport. How important basketball is at the OUA level. How important it is at U Sport level. Right? I know we had a TV contract with Sportsnet to cover our Final Eight or Finals. Doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, Tim McAuliffe used to be the one that used to call the games.
Right.
Hasn't happened in years, I believe. I remember he used to be back on, like, the Score. Like, they used to have
right.
stuff there.
Viewership. They tell us the viewership. No one's watching the games. Okay, but you don't have any games leading up to those games.
It's like, how do you expect people to get invested in these right. games, these talents, if you're like, you know what? Finally, here's some top university players, and here's what you got to, like, create some, like, investment early on. And you know what I hate, to be honest with you? And I'm going to bring this up. They're charging to watch the games.
I know.
I hate that.
So they're trying to generate revenue any way they can. That's how I think that's why I don't know the business model, the business, how things are working on the business.
They
got to
be generating money. If you're charging, the Canada West, I think they were one of the first to introduce that model.
They
and
were.
I paid for it once. I'll be honest with you. I paid for it. I tried to watch those Alberta teams, those Calgary teams. And did the OUA introduce it? I think someone mentioned it to me.
Yeah. This year. This is the first year.
Insane. I will say that I can't believe, I don't know how many people paid for it. I'd love to like learn the numbers on that. But if you're charging people, there should be some return, whether it's players wise or there should be some, like you mentioned, tournaments or something like that.
How are we growing?
Yeah.
That's my question is, what is our part in the growth of this game? And what is our part in making this experience for these athletes who commit so much time? Like, that's the one thing. Like, when I started to where we are now, we asked so much more of your weight training. You're doing this, you're doing that, study hall. That. And what are they getting in return? And so we're asking so much more of our athletes, but it's the same. Like, the experience is the same. I played. I don't see the experience being any different than I played than what it is now, except for $1,500 more that you can get on an AFA scholarship. And that, to me, that doesn't show growth. I don't feel good about it. And again, it's easy for me to sit in this seat and say all these things because I don't know the inner workings of the OUA and U-Sport.
I'm going to find out. We'll do some podcasts.
All right. But to me, that's important. Like, how do we keep kids home? And I'll use my son's scenario. My son is graduated in 4 years. Played Division I basketball, but he's got 1 year. If he wanted to play a fifth year, he could play here. But because he played 4 years in the U.S., he can't come back here and play his fifth. Even if he takes a master's program, he can't play his fifth. So how are we getting, and there's many, a lot of guys are in the same boat. How are we getting the best players to play in U-Sport if that's a simple rule? They're taking all our guys, and the guys who want to come back, we're not letting play. All he wants to do is take a master's here, and he can't because he can't play. There's some rules that just don't make sense to me. And I try to, like, look at it from, like, a broader perspective. Why do we have this rule? Does every school have a master's program? So is it an advantage to TMU because we have 20 master's programs and so-and-so doesn't have them? I guess it is. But that's hurting our product. Right. And then I go back. Okay. I go back to different things. Why hasn't this rule changed? Well, not every school can support the rule change. And then, so we're not making it better. So those three schools are holding back progress. So I don't know which perspective that people have on this or share on this, but for mine, it might be completely different than everybody else's.
No, I feel like you're preaching to the choir, to be honest. I talked to a lot of U-Sports coaches and, I think
the difference is I'm not afraid to say it now because I'm old and my time is running out.
You got nothing to lose, right?
That's right. I'm going to retire. If I done this at 35, I might be blacklisted, right?
No, I don't think you will. I think this is like, you know, like,
I think I want to be progressive. I want this to be better. There's so much talent here, right? That we don't get to see, or it's not growing, or we're not doing enough and you know, we've never said anything because we don't want to rock the boat.
It's time to rock the boat.
Yeah.
It's time to rock the boat.
We got to make it better.
I might get some angry emails from U-Sports, but you know what? It's time. Right.
But does it make a difference? Does it change? Like, and I don't know if this is fair, and this might be controversial, but OUA introduces a black or a BIPOC scholarship of $2,000, which I think is great. But why did they introduce it? Why do you think they introduced it? Does it take George Floyd dying to change a rule or to add something? No, this should have been done a long time ago. And now that you've done it, how do we make it better? How do we build it? How do we get more money in that? How do we take it to the next? To me, it's how do we take things to the next level? We get to here and we stay here and we stay here and we stay here. How do we get to here? And I applaud OUA for doing that because it's a long time coming. It should have been, you know, when they said that they were going to take it, we're going to make it full scholarships, right? OUA said they're going to give out full tuition. Yeah, but who's got the money? Like, who's going to finance that? Like, I go to my AD and I'm like, okay, we can give out this amount of money. He goes, yeah, for sure. But we don't have the money to give out the full. And I respect that. They don't. So don't announce that and think it's a big announcement when half the schools can't make it happen. So, you know, again, I'm sitting here. It's easy for me to sit in this chair and say all these things, but I don't know the inner workings of the higher ups. And I just want to make this the best experience that I can for these guys. I'm a product of going to school and graduating with $35,000, $40,000 worth of loans that I got to pay back to OSAP. I don't want any of my guys to go through that. I don't want any of them to deal with that, right? And so I think that's important. How do we do that? if BIPOC helps that, that BIPOC award definitely helps that. I think it's great that we have it in place. But how do we take it to the next level?
Yeah, we need more.
That's right.
We need more. I'm still paying back OSAP loans, to be honest with you. You know, right? So they're still after me. I hope they're not listening to this.
That's right. I may have to move.
I might have to cut this part out because it's been how many years? You can't show this part, fellas. Yeah, I'm getting too many mails about hey, you got to pay this.
But you know what I mean? Like
they got
to
chase.
I'm asking this kid to put in like 20 hours a week to play for our school and represent our school, but we can't help them?
Yeah.
Come on, that's not fair.
You mentioned watching that Carleton-Ryerson game. So many pros in that. Why do you think, is it, you mentioned, now guys are just going JUCO instead. They're doing X amount of years. Why isn't the talent level as high as what you remember it to be?
Because they can go somewhere else and play for free. You don't accumulate the OSAP debt, right? You get to play at a higher scale, a higher level, right? If you're a hooper, you want to play at the best level, right? Like, before the Raptors came here, if you said any kid was dreaming about the NBA, you'd look at him and say, okay. Now, you've seen it. You've seen all these guys get to the league. So it's not like a dream that doesn't come true anymore. It actually exists, and these young guys look at that. And what is the best path for me to get there, right? And so if we don't grow, they're not going to choose. We're not an option. We're last option. And so I don't want to be the last option. I want us to be, you know, right up there. Or I want us to be better than JUCO. This is why you should come here and not go to JUCO.
Yeah. Where would you rank U Sports? Is it at the bottom?
Yeah. It doesn't compete with anything in the U.S. right now. So if we're comparing it to what's going on in the U.S., I would say that. If you're looking at it in Canada, it's right where it needs supposed to be.
Could we talk about U Sports? Can any of these like other organizations help out, like Canada Basketball or anything? Like, what could they do? Because I don't know if they're really tapped into this kind of stuff. Obviously, they have players that end up playing for the national team. They know what the pipeline is. Like, mm-hmm. I remember just chatting with Nathaniel Mitchell, like, and he was talking about it. Like a lot of U Sports guys, you know, and it's cool to see. But is there something the government on another level? Because I, from my belief, I just think U Sports doesn't have money. That's what I think is what's going on. I think they're just like, you know what? We don't have money to actually do any of this kind of stuff.
So if you know that, and if that is the reason why.
I would assume. I don't know
100%. You don't know.
That's my guess.
But that's, then tell me that.
Yeah.
If you're telling me that we do not have the finances to do the things that we need to do, then now I know. So how do I get, like, I know the situation. How do I get around that? So how do I make it better? And I can draw back on our experience when I would go to, when I first started coaching, I had 1,000 ideas about how to make this better. And every time I took it to my AD, he said, no. So I had a gentleman that was, you know, an alumnus and someone who supported me in what I was doing. He said, well, how do we make this happen on ourselves? Like without going through the AD and the school, how do we make it work? Like, if he says no to this, what can we do to make it work? And so that's the approach. Like, if you tell me you can't give me money because you don't have it, I respect that. So now I know I have to go get it, right? But now I know. Like, I think the part about being in the dark and not knowing how things work and, you know, what is the process for this decision? What is the process for that decision? I think that we used to have a coaches' fraternity. Yeah. We used to go to the Nationals. We used to sit together. We used to have meetings. Yeah. How do we make the game better?
Yeah. Doesn't exist?
No, we don't do that anymore. Because our coaches feel like whatever we decide doesn't matter because it's going to go on to this committee and that committee and they're going to shoot it down. So, and we're like, aren't we supposed to be the experts on our game in this country? But we're not being treated like that. So everything that we put forward doesn't make it to the next level. Because maybe it's resources. Maybe it's like it can't happen, right? But at least we know why. Like, tell us why it doesn't work, right? And how can we? What can we do? Or what are the chances? What are the options that we have to make it work or do something in the meantime? Like, fundraising now is a big part of what we do. If you're a Canadian coach, you're fundraising. That's part of the job.
What does that look like?
It's crazy. Everybody wants the dollar. Everybody's fundraising, right? Like, you look at camps. Everybody runs a camp. The camp market is saturated. Like, why should I choose your camp over this camp? So you're fighting that. And so how are you raising money is a big part of it, right? And so you become more of a fundraiser than you do a coach. And I think when I left Ottawa U, I felt like I can't keep raising money because I'm not coaching. I'm tired of raising money. I want to coach.
Focus on what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. And so McGill gave me that option, right? And so, but, you know, as time goes by, things change. We're at a point now where schools are losing money because they can't get international kids into school. They've cut the number of international students. So we're not dealing with the same pot of money that you were dealing with because schools make money on international students. And so they're losing money. And you're watching McGill cut programs because they're losing money that they would normally get. And so us as coaches, we may not know all that. We don't know the financial crisis that's going on right now. And so we're like, give me this. And then my guy's telling me, I can't. But I don't know why. And if you're telling me we can't, then how do we get around the we can't? And so your relationship with your AD is critical, right? And you got to have that conversation. Again, candid, open, honest, transparent conversations.
The funny thing is this podcast was supposed to just touch on U Sports NIL.
I killed it on my bed.
No, I love this. Okay. I think I'm going to change the title to be like, what is wrong with U Sports?
Okay.
I think that's what, like.
I don't know if that's the right approach about what's wrong with U Sport. I think it's how do we make U Sports better?
How do we fix U Sports, yeah.
How do we make it better? I think that is the direction I think we want to go in. It's not what's wrong with it. We know it's a money thing. It's a financial thing. Is it how do we make it better with the limitations that we have?
Yeah. And I just got to sell podcast clicks, you know? That's the gear.
I hear you.
But, you mentioned expanding the Final Eight. I want to get your thoughts on that. What would you like to see?
12.
Give me your dream. 12? 12 teams? How does it look like for you?
Like the biggest thing is why can't we go 16? All right? It's because finances. Like you're staying it's an extra day or extra 2 days of hotel and meals and different things like that. Back in the day when Halifax had the national championships, they had sponsors. You go to the nationals, your meals were taken care of. Your hotel rooms were taken care of. It was a different animal. And it was a big event. Athletes were treated so, so well, but they had sponsorship. Out east in Halifax, they had sponsorships. And you were bidding on hosting, and the cost to host was a fair price, but people were paying it. Now they're having a tough time getting hosts. I don't know if it's true.
It's the same five hosts I see.
Right. People have money. But the price is not, the price has gone down dramatically in terms of wanting to be a host. But you don't have the sponsors. So now you got to pay for your hotels. Now you got to pay for your meals. And so it's a different animal. So when ADs look at this and they make a decision not to expand it, it's because of money. They're not thinking about how we can make it better. It's how we survive. And so me wanting it 16 is thinking the betterment of the game, but 16 is not reality. So I'm like, well, how do I make it real? And 12 to me makes it real because
it's the middle ground.
You're adding one day. I think I've worked it out. I've had a whole plan for it.
I love this.
You're adding one more day of stay. But now used to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and teams used to go out Wednesday, Thursday. Now every team goes out on a Monday or Tuesday. So we're all going out there early. Right? And if you can get four more teams in this and make it a bigger event, I think every coach would go for it, every basketball program. I think, can you still make it financially feasible for teams to do it?
Yeah. Is there one rule you would change about U-Sports?
One rule? Oh, wow.
I don't know. One that you like.
I would think that allowing us to use that pot of money that everybody has to our own discretion. So if I want to give you a full scholarship.
I'll take it. I'll play right now.
I'll give it to you, right?
I'm available in January if you're looking for.
But I know if I give you 15, I only got this amount of money for like 9 other guys or 10 other guys. Right. So it's how you use your money. But I think having that option keeps a guy like a great player at home. Right? I'm going to school in Canada for free. It changes everything. Right. And so I think that would be the one rule that I would probably change.
Just touching on the NIL part again. Do you think just like obviously recruitment has changed? We talked about that. But does selling like a guy like you're here for 1 year and then you're out.
Mm-hmm.
Does that like. Turn like is that ruining U Sports in a way, in your opinion, like turning it into like a 1 year type of like league type of for guys?
I don't know if it's ruining, but that's where we're at. So I have to adapt to the environment that's been created. It hasn't been created by U Sport, but that's the environment that's out there. Right. And the basketball environment tells you that every kid wants to play Division I basketball. or Division II, whatever they want to go, right? They don't want to pay for school. They want to get the best basketball experience. And so I don't think U Sports is created. It's just the way the basketball environment is. And so how do we grow? How do we change? How do we adapt? How do we get to that level where we make it better for a kid to stay home? Like, how do we make it better for a kid to stay home?
Are you hopeful? Just kind of want to end off with the asking.
That's
you.
That's a great question.
Do you think, like, and when you hang it up, I don't know if it's anytime soon. Maybe you want to drop an exclusive. Tell us when that's going to be. But are you hopeful for U Sports basketball when you look at it in the future, where it's headed and your thoughts? Because you obviously give so many, like, I think you're preaching. Like I said, preach to the choir. Like, a lot of people have these thoughts.
But I ask you, who has these thoughts? Like, how many people in actuality care about U Sport basketball? Right?
Put my hand up.
But you're a loyal guy. You're a basketball guy. And so, you know, these are conversations I have with my colleagues and my other coaches. I'm like, does anybody actually care besides us and the few diehard fans like yourself? So are we just, you know, are we making all these comments? Are we beating our head against the pavement when actually nobody cares whether U Sports is this or U Sports is that, right? And so I think that's my first question. And in terms of, do I see it getting better? I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I haven't seen much grow. I think we got to a point where I thought it was going to go, and then it kind of just went back. Like, we took three steps forward, and then we took three back again, and then we're kind of stuck right now in the mud. And how do we – I don't know if we're going to move forward, right? The opportunity to give out full tuition, I mean, I think we're beyond that now. We have to find a way to take it to another level where we can give out full scholarships.
Yeah. Dave, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. I feel like this was a much needed discussion beyond just NIL, just U Sports basketball, the landscape in general. And yeah, I'm excited to watch TMU this season. I'm coming out to some January games.
Awesome.
Scheduled it in my book. And just can't thank you enough for just this honest, unfiltered conversation. I think much needed. I think a lot of people in the community are, like I said, people I talk to feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this podcast just like brings the conversation forward, right, where we can talk about this openly. What is wrong? What we could fix? What's the good parts? Because right. I think there's a lot of good parts about esports.
Absolutely.
Right? We didn't touch on a lot of it.
That's right.
But
absolutely.
There's some. That's why I keep coming out to games.
Right.
Because that's where my love, honestly, for basketball expanded even more. So, I can't thank you enough. Any last thoughts?
Appreciate it. I think that you're right on it. I think that there's a lot of good things that we haven't talked about today, but I think there's a way to make it better. And I think maybe everybody, all the stakeholders, getting together and sitting down at the table and trying to figure out ways to make it better would be a great thing for everyone to make it happen. And I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you at our games and all our alum at our games. And we're doing some pretty neat things at TMU. We're just trying to keep it going and going and build on what Coach Roy did and Coach PT did while they were there.
I say this to every guest. I need courtside tickets for some games.
That's an easy one.
That's an easy one. I say it to every guest.
If I see you at a game and I'll see you courtside, I'm going to look over at Jeremy and say, hey, Jeremy, what's going on?
Yeah, Joe Anthony. Jeremy said he's got me, so I'm going to text Jeremy. I'm going to text him and be like, yeah, I need some tickets. Joe Anthony said he's got me on some Montreal Lions
good,
tickets.
Good.
So I got to go out to Montreal.
Like, I think you got a great voice. Like, what you're doing with these podcasts, and there needs to be more. Like, if we're going to get some change, it needs to be voices in podcasts like this, because I think the potential is unlimited in what we can do and where we can go. Like change is difficult for everybody, right? Change is the hardest thing. But if you don't push for it and you don't have people advocating for it, it's not going to happen. And so I think these kind of podcasts and these kinds of conversations are healthy. I think we need more of it.
You heard it from Dave. Go, if you haven't already, leave a rating. Leave us Apple on Spotify. Give us 5 stars. You know the deal. Dave, I knew you from your McGill days. I think I interviewed you once back then. And I just remembered how, like, I'd watch your post-game interviews that you would do. I think it was going up with the mic and chatting with the reporters afterwards. I was like, I know he's a great talker. I got to get him on the podcast. But this podcast blew my mind.
I appreciate that.
Blew my mind. So I'm just so happy to have you on. And yeah, much needed discussion, like I said. And hopefully a lot of people will be listening to this, and we're going to elevate it even more. So Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Appreciate it.
This has been the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news, stories, and analysis on Canadian basketball. I'm your host, Lee Ben Osmond. I'm my guy, Dave, and we out.